It's movie time. Maybe a surprise for you, but certainly a surprise for me. Good afternoon, movie person.
Hello.
It's nice to see you. It was very surprising to see a face walk past the window. And then this, on the door, it's like, who's that? Come to eat my porridge.
There you go. You see, what happens is they just wheel me in. They wheel me in for half an hour, and then they wheel me out. You know, like in Silence of the Lambs, where he comes in with the mask on his face?
Oh, on the trolley.
On the trolley, yeah, yeah. That's me every Friday, 3:30, yes, on Phoenix FM.
Okay, well, it's a pleasure to have you here. And we've been talking off-air about my disdain for the cinema. Uh-huh. And once you'd picked your jaw up off the floor, we got into quite a nice little chat about Marvel and the Avengers, which I think we need to cover in a little bit later on. But what's hot this week?
Well, what's really, really hot, the new Marvel film Thor Ragnarok.
Hammer Man.
Hammer, yes, yes, yeah. I mean, if you want to go, that's MC Hammer, though, isn't it? You
know, baggy trousers. I did warn you that my responses to these films and characters will be Hammer Man.
That's fine.
Mask Man, Scary Man.
Okay, yeah. I'll take it down a bit then. Yeah, so Hammer Man, Thor, he's back for his third outing, solo outing. In all honesty, I'm not a big fan of the first two films at all. What it did is it took itself too seriously. There was a lot of techie stuff going on, a lot of sciencey stuff. Let's come to England, and you're like, why are you here in England? You're from a completely different celestial planet. So I didn't like those. I'm pleased to say that I really enjoyed this one. You know, Thor Ragnarok. So the story is basically the home planet of Thor, Asgard, is being run by the evil Hela. She now has to deal with Lord of Thunder, Thor, who's got to fight his way back onto his planet and also race against time to save those who he holds dear.
It's a hard life, isn't it?
It sounds terrible, really, and he does it quite a lot with his shirt off as well.
Now, that's the thing. Women love this, don't they, generally? Yep. It's a man with long hair, yep, good pecs, good guns, yep, and wielding a B&Q hammer.
It's slightly larger than a B&Q hammer, it's got to be said. But, but then at the same time, you know, us nerds, we love it as well, because, you know, it's all from the comic book. So, yeah, as I said, I had an absolute blast watching this. I was really impressed with it. What they've done here with Thor is they've moved him from being this, you know, kind of guy who's longing for the girl and whatever else, and they've moved him into being, okay, we know he's a muscly guy, but they've moved him into, like, this comedic character. So he's got lots of brawn, but very little brains. And it actually works in the context of the film. I think this
Himbo
is a good thing. Yeah, kind of. Yeah, it's the He-Man film I've always wanted, basically. It's great because from the opening set piece, which is a huge set piece, there are gags every 30 seconds, and it works brilliantly. It works in the context of the film. It works because they've now made Thor this comedic character. So what we also get is then this very serious backstory with Hela, played by Cate Blanchett, of where she come from, what she's doing now. And it's kind of an interesting story. Normally, you know, these Marvel ones, they're throwaway. You don't really care about it. So you actually care about what's happening here. Then you've got Thor, who wants to save his planet and his people. So you've kind of got these two forces fighting against each other, yet there are things going on in the background between both of them. Looking at the film, aesthetically, the look and the visual of the film is very much from a comic book. You know, it's kind of been missing from the first two Thor films. Now, it looks like they've gone, right, here's a comic book, just take what's on the page, basically. So it's bright, it's colourful, it's almost like a neon visual film as well. It's so bright and popping out at you. And the great thing is, when they do time travel as well, you've got kind of like that Rainbow Road effect, so it looks like they're time travelling, and it's really cool as well. The best thing about this film is the fact that it looks like everybody is having really good fun. Really, really good fun. Like, there's no script at all. Like, they've just turned up and gone, right, just ad-lib your way through it. And it works brilliantly, you know.
I'm sure the paycheck helps.
I imagine it probably does, yeah. But it helps when you've got a comedic director doing it as well. That's the thing. So, you know, when you've got Chris Hemsworth just basically turning up and he's muscly, but at the same time he embraces these comedic sidekick aspects, it works great. He's then got somebody, his right-hand person, Valkyrie, played by Tessa Thompson, who is this... She's, well, it's very difficult. She's kind of like the brains and the brawn behind Thor in this one. It's a great performance, clearly out of the comic books. Really impressed with this. Then there is the Green Man, aka the Hulk.
Ah, yes.
Right. Yes,
oh,
yes.
You've got my parlance down to a T now.
There you go,
you
see. I already knew. So he's in it as well. I won't say too much, but they basically all team up and they come this, like, fearsome threesome.
This is where I can go, jolly impressed.
Yeah.
I'm getting good at this.
You're getting there. Yeah, absolutely. But as I said, you know, Cate Blanchett plays Hela. She, for me, is the best person in this. It just looks like she is having a rip-roaring time playing a pantomime villain who is very seductive, very devious. She knows what she wants, and she's basically just going to go after it. I honestly couldn't take my eyes off her throughout the entire film. So, you know, Thor Ragnarok does everything right. What you want from a comic book movie is for it to look good, for it to be interesting, like have a good story, not just a throwaway story, and for it to be fun. Thor Ragnarok is absolutely every single one of those.
That's good. And the comic book fans are notoriously loyal. So if you do go down a certain direction, too humorous, too dark, too campy, case in point, the first reboot of Batman in 1989.
Yes.
When Michael Keaton was announced as the actor to play Bruce Wayne and Batman. Of course, he was known at that time for more comedy roles, like Beetlejuice and stuff like that. And of course, Tim Burton as a director, like, what do you want Tim Burton doing Batman? And complete travesties like John Landis directing Beverly Hills Cop 3.
Yes.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, but, you know, sometimes they've got to take these chances. That's the thing. Some of them pay off, some of them don't. You know, you were doing some great examples there. But, yeah, this is the thing. There's always going to be pushback against certain casting. You know, it happened a couple of years ago when Ben Affleck was cast as Batman. Now, I'm perfectly fine with it. He's got the chin. That's what you need to be Batman. For Chris Hemsworth in this, I think he's the perfect casting in it. And Cate Blanchett was brilliant casting. I don't know how they got her to do this role and say just turn up and just basically be nasty, and it works.
What are your thoughts on people eating in the cinema?
I hate it, absolutely. I cannot stand it. You know, a drink, but not a fizzy drink, because I don't want the all the way through.
Or burping.
None of that, thank you. No talking, absolutely no talking.
I hate that. You go with your friends and it's fine, but if you go with a partner, whatever the gender, or you've got a couple in front of you, whatever the gender, what happened there? What's his name? That's a generic voice, by the way. It's not any particular gender.
It does happen.
I missed that bit. What happened there? Who's he? What happened there? I don't get it. And then this is what happens. Someone does this with their phone, and what am I doing right now?
Oh, you've got the light on. Yeah.
Because they want to send their friend a text message or tweet that they're seeing hashtag Thor, hashtag Pex, hashtag Hammer.
If somebody has their phone on during the film when I'm in the cinema, I will go over and tell them to turn it off.
Oh, you do that.
Oh, I do. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I've had people come back at me and go, well, it's not on. You know, the sound is not on. It's not about the sound. It's about the light pollution. I know that sounds stuffy, and I know that's ridiculous, but at the same time, you're there to watch the film. You wouldn't go to the theatre, and all of a sudden, halfway through, when, you know, Ian McKellen is playing Hamlet, you get your phone out and go, yeah, he's doing all right, isn't he? It's the same with the cinema. I don't understand people who pay a lot of money, because it's expensive to go to the cinema, and not want to watch half of it, instead want to look at something on their phone. It baffles me, it really does. I'm there to be immersed in that film.
Okay. Are we moving on, or should we have a little break?
No, let's do one more at the cinema.
Okay.
Because we've got a documentary about the life and times of Grace Jones. In the blurb, it says, singer/actor/model/lover/sister/daughter/mother/grandmother.
Where does she find the time?
This is the thing, yeah, exactly. But she still finds the time, you know. So they've made this documentary about her. It's not your usual, Grace Jones was born, then she did this, and then she did that, and then she did this, and, you know, she became this icon. It's not that at all. Instead, it's kind of a snapshot of a certain amount of years of her life. So what we get is some behind-the-scenes footage along with some concert footage of her singing all of these incredible songs, you know, Slave to the Rhythm and Pull Up to the Bumper and everything. And they're great. I mean, it sounds fantastic when you've got it blaring. And she's still phenomenal at singing live. I mean, the energy, you're just like, I don't know how she does it. This is incredible. And then what you've got is interspersed with all of this sort of behind-the-scenes footage, what's great about it is we actually get to know a little bit of Grace Jones, the person behind the music. So we get to see her go to Jamaica, where all of her family is, and they're on this bus journey, just the whole family, just on this bus journey, and there's a lot of laughing going on, there's a lot of joking, and it's not, I'm Grace Jones, I'm the diva, and everything else like that. No, her family are sort of, you know, making jokes at her expense and things like that. And they go to church, they show you them all going to church, and Grace Jones says, I'm not religious, but I go here to back up my mum because she sings. And then a bit later on, when Grace Jones is on stage, she does this impression of a mum singing Amazing Grace. And it is very touching, but also very, very funny. So you have all of these things. And like jokey things of Grace Jones, but then you get a serious side, and she talks a lot about the difficulty she had with her father figure. It wasn't her father, a guy called Mass P. So there's a lot of very emotional moments in this film about how she became the way she was and what happened. And there's a very lovely moment in it where she's talking to camera and she says, you know, this guy affected me very badly and I decided to go to therapy. And what happened was when I was talking to the therapist, it turned out that actually I ended up analysing the therapist. I told them more than they told me, which I think is, you know, it's perfect Grace Jones, really. But one of the funniest moments in the film, and it had me howling with laughter, is she's trying to make this new album. This was probably about 4 or 5 years ago. And she's trying to get her production team, Sly and Robbie, back again, you know, the famous Jamaican production team. So she calls up Robbie, and he doesn't answer the phone. And she knows that he knows that she's trying to call. So she keeps leaving him all these voicemails. And then when he finally answers, she just chastises him for not picking up the phone. I mean, it's absolutely hilarious. All the way through, there's lots of funny performances. The performances, the live concert performances are great. And there's one moment that I thought perfectly captured her in this film. She's in a taxi driving down the Champs-Élysées because she now lives in Paris. And she says, when I die, all I want to be is I want to be happy. And all the way through this film, you think it's clear that while she has this outward persona, she's very happy in what she does. And I thought that's the perfect metaphor for this. It's really, it's such an insightful and entertaining biopic. You learn so much about the woman behind all of the music. I was captivated by this.
I've seen her in at least one film, and I think that's A View to a Kill.
Okay.
And I'm aware that she was a bit of a pop star in the 80s, and she was in what's the Arnold Schwarzenegger films? Conan the Barbarian, Conan, and yes, the Destroyer, and those sort of, we're reading back to Swords and Hammers again, aren't
yes
we? She always strikes me as a little bit scary, a little bit unpredictable. Wasn't she on a chat show where she...
Yeah, she beat up the host. But the funny thing was, I was at the premiere of this film in the week, and she was there to do a Q&A after, and she was as eccentric and as bonkers as you would expect. But that's Grace Jones. That's what you want. You know, in the documentary, she talks about hitting that guy. And she said, you know, he turned his back on me. I tapped him on the shoulder and I gave him a warning. She said, I give all of my men warnings. One warning, whether it's a lover or a friend, I give them one warning. After that warning, they get punched.
That's us told.
There we go. Yeah, exactly. So,
but that's the thing with these documentaries, like anything from like the Osbournes to The Simple Life with Paris Hilton and all that sort of trash. You just want people to kind of sell their soul a little bit and just see what they're like behind closed doors, and whether it's Sharon Osbourne scooping up dog droppings from the kitchen and seeing what someone's like, you know, at home on a Sunday morning in not very fetching attire.
You just want to see the people behind the makeup.
Basically. Yeah,
that's what it is, and you do see that in Grace Jones, Blood, Light, and Bammy, we should call it. You do see that, you know, there's a lot of behind the scenes footage. There's a couple of moments where she's putting on makeup, but she's talking to other people at the same time, and then she's talking about this performance that she did that she hated because the dancers around her was like being in a brothel. She's like, that's, you don't understand what the song is about when you've got dancers around you, so this is completely wrong. But yeah, you do find out a lot about her. This is behind you know that VH1 Behind the Music thing that they used to do.
Yeah,
this is kind of it, but in greater detail.